example, in the tax court, if the Department of Revenue decided that a reduction was necessary and the county didn't agree with that, then the county would have to carry its own case and would probably want access to the appraisal information. So these amendments basically provide a similar exemption for, or a similar requirement of confidentiality for the Department of Revenue. Information that is received by the county assessor from the Department of Revenue that is designated to be held confidential by the property owner would also have to be held confidential by the assessor. And then there is one additional amendment that would assure that information back and forth between the department and the county assessor's offices wouldn't be hampered by this confidentiality provision, so long as the confidential nature of the information that was exchanged was preserved by the receiving party. Currently,
No. Excuse me. After line 19 in your amendment, have you addressed sub 3?
That was just the last thing that I mentioned. That would preserve the freedom of exchange of information, so long as if confidential information were to be exchanged, that it's the confidential nature would be observed by either the county or the department, whoever was receiving it. Currently, the department has an administrative rule that attempts to accommodate people who give information on the understanding that it's confidential under these circumstances, and does include a provision in its agreement with a county that for which it's providing industrial appraisal services that any confidential information that is given to the county will be protected. But we would prefer to have specific statutory coverage of that question.
Okay, Senator Trull.
Looks, you know, just offhand, it looks like you're jumping into what appears to be not a very desirable bill, putting something in it that you want to get done. Am I wrong?
Well, the amendments are being offered in the case that you decide that the bill has some merit. If it doesn't,
well,
then
it doesn't
may
have
need
some
to.
Merit. Can you get what you want some other way, and does what you want happen?
Well, what we're doing right now is, under the public records law, there is a provision that we are interpreting to allow us to maintain information that is received for property tax purposes as confidential. We do have an administrative rule that covers another portion of that area, and as I just mentioned, in the agreement with the counties for which industrial appraisal services are provided, there is a specific provision. We just thought, if the vehicle was available, we would like to have clear statutory direction to maintain confidentiality.
Just in case.
It's not something that if you decide that this bill is ill-advised, that we're going to really be hamstrung if it's not put in.
I think if my memory serves me, Department of Revenue amendments, they write them in such a way that they space it such that this number can be changed to any bill. It seems like I remember.
We're very flexible.
Yeah. in other words, no doesn't mean no. It means next time or something like that.
Maybe,
yeah. Okay.
That's Messenger George.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wished to testify this time on Senate Bill 62? I think we'll need to know more about the financial institution's view of the bill, if it affects appraisals on loans and that sort of thing. That could this could be a special session bill. So why don't you? Have you? Okay. Okay, we'll move then to the next item on the agenda, Senate Bill 63.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hammond.
Before we get into the next bill, I'd like to point out that this proposed amendment by the department, we've had a good chuckle over, might address the problem that I was dealing with earlier. I think maybe Senator Crowe was leading up to that, too. I don't know whether that's what the proponents of that issue would like, but it's strike me as being a possibility.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
Okay, Senate Bill 63 deals with the cargo container issue that we dealt with last session, and we required a study to be reported back, the whole thing. And as my understanding, Senate Bill 63 simply says baloney. It looks like a policy, the political policy decision that's to be made, and this simply makes it an existing exemption and does away with the study. Is that roughly correct?
I think that's right.
Okay. I didn't think you could say it in those terms. So, we have with us Darwin Rutland of the Portland Steamship Operators. Is it Rutland?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sure. Let's give it. We'll see if it's passed around.
Thank you.
I'm Darwin Rutland, representing the Portland Steamship Operators Association, and we are supportive of Senate Bill 63, and we appreciate the fact that this committee had initiated that bill. The reason that we're supportive, and I'd like to go through the cargo container tax exemption that you've got a copy of, and discuss and show you the reasons why we're so supportive. Basically, it's because the information required on that form is an extreme burden on us to provide. And secondly, we see that the information, we feel that the information is not adequate for any kind of future assessment. To start with, the total number of containers, where it says containers in Oregon as of January 1st, that particular information is probably the easiest type of information for us to come up with. But still, as operators, it takes us several hours of people in the office to accumulate it. Because as you can see, our inventories are spread throughout the state. They're not all in one location. Additionally, these inventories are just a fraction of the total inventory owned by each carrier. The carrier's value placed on these containers is a value that is assessed on a fleet of thousands in many cases. Whereas you can see our total inventory in the state of Oregon was just a fraction of that. So as a consequence, the total current market value requested and listed by us is based on an average per container. Now, we have several types. Some carriers have as many as 11 different types of containers. And it's very difficult to come up with this information. My stand is that if the county assessor, if this should ever have become true law, if he went down and took a visual check and tried to assess each one of our containers for value, he'd have a very difficult problem because the containers are all different ages. To continue down the form, containers arriving and departing Portland, that too we can get with some difficulty, but yet takes a clerk many hours to accumulate. The worst part of the form is the very bottom where it says value of goods shipped. This is not a requirement of the steamship line to produce this information. Never has been. It's the U.S. Department of Treasury that requests this on an export declaration. So that information is basically not that available at the steamship company. If this were required firmly by the county assessor, we would have great difficulty providing it. I would estimate it would take at least 2 to 3 people a matter of a minimum of a week to a week and a half working straight out 8-hour days to accumulate this information for an entire tax year. So, Mr. Chairman, that's basically it. Our problem with it and the reason that we support the bill, if there's any further questions from the committee, I'd be glad to try and answer them for you.
Okay, the question I have is to staff. The wording on line 7, for prior assessment years, comma, the law in effect for those years shall continue to apply, period. Now that's a funny sentence. Does that simply say that the exemption continues?
Yes, I think it.
For prior assessment years.
I don't think this property has ever been assessed in tax before.
No, it hasn't.
So, in other words, this, they were required to provide this form in the previous year, and I think most of them did, at least. They may not have given all the information,
yeah,
but I think they did accept all the applications.
Right. Mr. Chairman, that particular information that you see on the form that we did provide and we did not provide, we worked with the county assessor and explained to him our situation, which he accepted the form in this format. The thing we run into that I might further explain too is the fact that these current market values that we have placed on the containers, the county assessor, his access to such information as to value of containers, it's very difficult for him to get and fairly assess to every carrier because the containers are built throughout the world. There's plants in Holland, France, Germany, and Japan, which are the bigger ones. There are containers made in the United States, but the cost of them in the United States is much different than what is built overseas. So each carrier has a much different idea of value. So it would be, it's information that's very inconsistent.
Okay, so this bill then ends the need to file this information in order for the containers to be exempt and repeals the section requiring the study. Okay, Senator Charles.
Is there anyone who will come and argue that the information provided is essential information? Is there
anybody? No one has signed up, but the assessors are out of town.
Well, actually, I probably should speak to that.
Okay, go ahead.
The study that was required to be done by the Legislative Revenue Office. And in effect, the information that's required, that's asked for in this form, was developed by us, and that's what we needed to do the study. And in effect, all that it says is that if you want to find out the economic impact of taxing these containers, you need to know the tax that would have been levied on them. In other words, you need to know the value of the containers in Oregon at the time on the assessment date. And two, you need to know the economic value of the goods that are being shipped by them, so you can get the relative value of the increase in shipping costs that would occur as a result of taxing these containers. Okay. And so you need to know how much stuff's being shipped around in them so you can see what effect that's going to have on shipping costs. So those are the two things you need to know, and that's the reason for the request.
Senator Troll, you finished?
I think so.
Okay, Senator Jernstead.
What we're doing here is, if we pass number 63, is preventing the taxing of containers in Oregon, right?
Yes.
Okay. I was hoping that's what we were doing. I put in a bill at the request of some of the ports, I think it was 2 years ago,
and it
brought
passed.
This all about, and it passed. And there's nothing happened since that time that has convinced me but what we did the right thing. The state of California doesn't tax them. The state of Washington doesn't tax them. And if we allow taxation of containers in Oregon, it's going to put this state in a very unfortunate position in competition for trade. And so I'm very much in favor of this.
Kermit, did any of the assessors have anything to say on this? Do you know?
No, we have not discussed it at all.
Okay. Okay, we're going to assume that too when we take action on the bill. Mr. Senator Trill.
Yeah. Am I mistaken? Senator Jernstead's bill already passed.
Well, it's the bill. They are now exempt.
Right.
But the requirement was for legislative revenue to do the study in the bill that, and they made this the
now
form.
They're called off the study.
Yes. So. In part because the information, as the witness testified, is kind of impossible to get. And
we have not called off the study. The statute requires a study. So if you don't pass this law, the statute will require us to do the study with whatever information we can get.
Okay, so we need to pass this bill.
Yes.
Right. Rather than kill this bill, to call off the study.
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, just one other thing that you should be aware of, I assume you are, and that is the fact that the company that I represent, Japan Line USA Limited, that we took this to Superior Court in California and won that in Superior Court that containers would be exempt. So what we were trying to do is comply with the Oregon law despite the exemption by the federal court.
Yeah.
to appease the county appraiser, but as I pointed out, it's very difficult to come up with this information. And if it was for some purpose that potentially the original bill could be inflicted at a later time, we would be willing to try to comply. But inasmuch as it does not seem that there's any chance at present that the tax be inflicted, we are costing private industry many dollars in research, which is totally unfair, I believe.
Okay. Further discussion or questions of the witness?
Just to substantiate this a little bit further, that was added, I believe, to the bill when it went through as something that maybe we're going to do something that would really handicap the tax assessor in the city of Portland, but or Multnomah County, I should say, and they wanted this maybe as a continuing process. But to me, the whole concept is so wrong that I'd just like to get rid of it forever, for at least 10 years.
Okay. Thank you very much for your
testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Monroe?
Is the senator planning to retire in 10 years, or?
I didn't say that.
Yeah, bills in good form.
Yeah. So, now the president started at age 69, it's a whole new ballgame.
Yes.
Isn't today his birthday?
Well, it's just awkward language, I think, to say for prior assessment years, the law in effect for those years shall continue to apply. You're talking about prior. You're saying for prior assessment years, you're assuming then that the language that follows talks about those prior assessment years, but it doesn't. It talks about those years shall.
I could check with Barbara, and if you have any questions.
Well, Senator Trode has a motion, and then you could check with her, and if it's a problem, we can bring it back to committee before. Yes.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Monroe.
I'm not bothered by that language. To me, that language is designed to take care of those situations for previous tax years which may be pending in the courts or which are maybe brought up again, and you know, that saying is we're not doing anything retroactively here.
And what you just learned is that somebody that understands the language that well carries the bill on the floor. Senator Trode moves that the bill be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Okay. Yeah, our first roll call outside of coffee.
Senator Hanlon?
Aye.
Senator Jurgensen?
Aye.
Senator
Farland?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Let's see, if you vote no, you
don't. Oh, you don't have that rule over here.
Aye.
He's excused. Aye. Motion's adopted. Okay, Senator Monroe, would you like to carry the bill?
Oh, I'd be very happy to carry this bill.
To explain the language.
Yes. He's the only one to understand. Okay. Senate Bill 64. Property tax exemption strictly construed. I had... Senate Bill 64. I kept thinking we were on Senate Bill 137, but that's the rumors. Okay, Gary Carlson from Associated Oregon Industries. Well, Gary, you are probably here not in support of the bill, is that correct?
I want to raise some questions.
Okay. Kermit, do you want to try to explain the bill, or would you like the staff to try to explain it? Why don't you try to explain it to the committee? Do you want to? Or I don't want to put you on the spot. If you're not prepared to do it, we'll just go on with Gary.
I really am not
okay.
Prepared.
Okay, fine. Why don't we just have Gary come up? Okay, why don't you?
I think this bill is, and again, the bill of the county assessors. And my understanding it is that it is a reaction to what they feel is a too loose interpretation of the exemption statutes by the courts. And I believe the law reads now that the, or you might think that the law reads now exactly as it says, but they feel that even though the general rule is that exemptions are supposed to be strictly construed, that the courts have taken that too liberally and they want a better policy statement of that. And that's the reason for the bill. I can't really speak to the specific language that they've included in here, but I think that's the thrust of what they're trying to say.
This language is asking that it be strictly construed.
Right.
And you're saying they're concerned because the courts have said it should be too strictly construed.
No, they're concerned because they think the courts are being too liberal.
Oh, too liberal.
Even though the general rule is of strict construction, they feel that they've been too liberal.
I see. And so are allowing more exemptions. The courts are fewer.
They're allowing too many exemptions. They're being too liberal in their
interpretation
of what is exempt and what isn't. And you really need a lawyer to tell you, to go through all the court cases to understand it. I haven't gone through that myself.
You have an example?
Well, one of the areas that they are concerned about, I'm sure, is in the area of the minister's housing. And they have a bill on that, and where they think that the courts have been too liberal in granting exemptions to religious organizations for property that is not being used for religious purposes. Is it being used for housing, for example, or being used for not being used at all? It might be just land that's sitting out there that is appreciating in value. I think that's one area that they're concerned about. There are many others.
Would this bill address the problem of those people who declare that their house is a church and they call it the Monday night football
church,
new religion, and therefore it's tax exempt?
Well, some people have made claims. I don't think any assessors ever let one of those get by, but it does worry them. Maybe Kermit can speak to that now that I've said something wrong.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, getting into the housing side of it, I think, is quite a different subject from the strict construction. I mean, strict construction on housing may be similar in scope, but it covers a lot of different problems. I, again, apologize for not being totally ready. I didn't realize that these two bills were on today. Maybe that's my own fault. But anyway, on housing, for many, many years, living quarters was considered to be not primarily for religious or charity or whatever, and had been made taxable since the year one, if you'll accept that expression. And all at once, the interpretation changes, and most counties have a few now on appeal that are exempt, and all the rest of them are taxable. This is quite a problem in almost all counties, and they're wishing for something other than that. Now, on the strict construction, the only additional thing I could say to what Jim said is that in some cases, there are conflicting opinions on the same subject between different counties. We need some kind of rule that makes us as assessors know what the state's policy really is, if I'm making clear. But I am really not prepared to give you the details. But, for example, in a county that might have 500 dwellings, some organization might even rent dwellings for their people. Others own them. And over the years, they've all been taxable, and suddenly you will lose a few appeals. Maybe you've got 10 that's now exempt. The other 490 are still taxable. This creates real problems within your community. The assessors are looking for guidance on the housing. Now, again, strict construction does come into that area, but it's quite a different subject from just the strict construction of all exemption federal statutes.
I was just trying to bring something up.
I understand that. But, for example, I might mention one religious order, if that's the right term, that owned 119 acres of virgin timberland. And they cleared an acre and built a church. Were granted exemption on the church and the acre, and the timberland was denied because it's growing merchantable timber. They applied for the Western Oregon small tract timber classification was granted. Then they came back on an appeal a year or two later and got exemption. And the total membership of the order was 37 people. There's a real question here. How many acres should be exempt for a very small congregation, if that's the right word? There's all kinds of examples, at least on behalf of the assessors who are busy elsewhere. I would certainly recommend that you listen to the varied problems that they have on some of these things. And there are apparently conflicting opinions from one county to another county that have been taken on appeal. I think those were the kinds of things that brought about the reason for asking for more strict construction statewide.
This, Kermit, if I read that first paragraph, this is a little bit heavier than simply strict construction. It simply says, when in doubt, tax, doesn't it? Really, when it says, the statute is capable of more than one construction, each of which is reasonable. I guess to the court, the construction that results in taxability for the property must be used. Now that kind of falls over. That would mean that I would think that the court would not use history or past practices, that sort of thing. It simply would be then constrained to the one that results in taxability if they both seem reasonable.
I'll do my best. There may be there may be attorneys in the room. Yeah,
I've read the bill a couple times, and it seems to me that what this bill does is create the need now for more interpretation about the interpretation, and that the words strictly construed are meaningless. But that sentence I read, the one that results in taxability must be used, as the punchline of the bill, and the word strictly construed is simply a kind of a hollow point. It's just, unless the tax court has been handing down decisions saying, had I strictly construed the language, I would have decided this. However, I choose not to strictly construe the language, and thus I'm going to render this decision. It just seems to me that it's extremely loose.
Let me try. I don't know that I can help. This is just kind of a historical background, mm-hmm. Senator. The original definition in Oregon, as construed by the attorneys, which I'm certainly not, was strict construction of all exemption statutes.
Yeah.
Reading it the other way,
is strictly construed defined anywhere?
I believe it is in law dictionaries, but I'm not positive. But going the other route, the definition was taxation is the rule and exemption is the exception, mm-hmm. which kind of is the other way of saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And then as the years went by, there were some court decisions that said strict but reasonable construction. Then you get into what does reasonable mean in the legal sense. And then more recently, we've had decisions without the change of those terms that appear to be quite liberal in interpretation. This, again, getting back to the 500 dwellings, for example, over the years, some of them are still owned from a more strict reading, if that's the right term, Senator. And then more liberal readings in recent years. And then you've got a hodgepodge out there. And of course, if you suddenly grant all of those as exempt, then you cause a shift in some neighborhoods, shift in taxes, which nobody's really willing to bite the bullet on. That's why they're looking for policy here.
But my point is that when you're dealing with a congregation of 37 that owns a few acres of timberland, I'm not sure that it's a matter of strict construction as much as it is a matter of determining whether or not they are, in fact, a nonprofit religious organization. Now, I don't know that strict construction in that case helps the judge or helps anybody trying to interpret that situation much at all, because we didn't write the law that says Baptist, Presbyterians, and a few others are exempt.
Now, I understand.
I can understand strict construction then, but I do not understand how the term strictly construed, is going to help that much. But that one line, I think, perhaps does really help.
Reading the definition of a religious organization, maybe this isn't pertinent. And I'm not an attorney, not trained as an attorney, but if you really want to get confused, read some legal definitions of what a religious organization is. You really get confused, at least I do, at that point.
And in my discussions of legal definitions, the term strictly construed also is subject to interpretation and what that means.
Sure. And that's what's really happened, I believe, is the interpretations of that type of language. As to whether it's heavy or not, I only mention that I think most legal dictionaries or definitions hold that taxation's the rule and exemption's the exception, and then you get into individual interpretations on that. I think that's correct, Senator.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you for your help. Gary Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Gary Carlson with Associated Oregon Industries. I think most of the points that I wanted to bring up have been mentioned.